or at least that's trying very hard, in my estimation, to be godless. Hopefully we won't quite get there. But it's not just a matter of I get my feelings hurt because people don't like the way I live, or people make fun of me because I value certain things that they don't value, or whatever. It's not a personal kind of thing. Well, it is personal, but it's not just personal. It's not mainly personal. We're not talking about how life is inconvenient for us as Christians in Pensacola, Florida in 2019 because of the way all these knuckleheads are doing out there in the world. That's not the point. That's not the main point. The point is, we pick up the news and we look at what's going on in our society and we scratch our heads and wonder how in the world we could get here. And the answer is, we have tried very hard in my lifetime in our American society to make God meaningless, worthless, marginal, irrelevant in everyday life. And people of God, people like me, dealt with that over the last 50 years because ultimately that's about them, that's not about me. I'm living my life and that's just kind of the way it is. And we certainly, at some point, began to realize, or I began to realize, in the last 10 years especially, that this kind of value shift does not come without consequences. You can't make God meaningless in a previously God-centered world and not have ramifications that touch every single one of us. Our world is different. Our world is worse because of this. And I want to talk about values particularly here this morning for a little bit. And what is proposed by a lot of people to be a subjective sort of thing. Well, you have your definition, I have my definition kind of thing. I would like to, I've been reading some articles along these lines in recent times, and I'd like to run you through an exercise briefly here before we get going. Pause it. A fact is what can be proven scientifically through experimentation and experience. An opinion is what is felt, thought, or believed. That definition is relatively common. Those definitions are relatively common in our modern society. This is taken actually from public school curricula that are in common usage in the United States and in the modern day. The first time I saw those, I said, all right, that sounds about right. That sounds like what I have been hearing my whole life, what I've been believing my whole life. The facts are the things you can prove, the opinions are the things that you can't prove. And that's basically it, okay. And then that concept was placed in context by the author of the article that I was reading, and I suddenly came to realize that I have subconsciously bought into a bill of goods that has been presented to us by our society that was, in my estimation, deliberately intended to undermine the concept of spiritual values in our society. If, in fact, it is true that facts are only what can be proven and opinions are things that can't be proven, let me run you through a few things that are listed in public school notices, basically. Exercises that fourth graders or sixth graders or whatever go through. Which is a fact and which is an opinion? Very common exercise. How would you answer these things? Copying homework assignments is wrong. Cursing in school is inappropriate behavior. All men are created equal. It is worth sacrificing some liberties to protect our nation from terrorism. It is wrong for people under the age of 21 to drink alcohol. Vegetarians are healthier than people who eat meat. Drug dealers belong in prison. Which one of these are facts and which one of these are opinions? Well, based on the definitions that we were talking about before, they're all opinions. Because none of them can be proven in the traditional sense. You can't put liberty in a test tube and find out whether it turns the water blue or not. That's not the way it works. These are traditionally
unprovable sorts of things. Now, would we sign on to the idea that these are not, in fact, facts? Now, some of them are judgment calls. We may differ a little bit with one another as to which ones of these are judgment calls. But I would like to think that we, as Christians anyway, whose values are rooted in God, more on that in a little bit, would say that some of these things, which maybe cannot be proven facts in the traditional sense of the word, nevertheless are facts. Let me give you something else. Which one of these are going to be, if you haven't gotten the point quite yet, about Bible-based judgments, Bible-based values? God exists. We are created in God's image. Humans are better than animals. Murder is okay if the person deserves it. Stealing is wrong. Breaking the law is okay if you don't get caught. Other people's welfare and feelings matter. Good and evil are definable terms. Which one of those are facts? And which ones are opinions? Are you getting a little uncomfortable at this point? I'm getting extremely uncomfortable. Because I come to realize that all these things also, things that I live and die by, are by the previous definition, opinions. And the point, of course, is, if you haven't gotten to the end of the line yet, let me take you to the finish line here. The point is, if things like this and dozens of others that we can talk about, if these are rendered in the category of opinion rather than in the category of fact, you cannot bind these things on other people. It's inappropriate now for you to say, you have to believe this. These things are true. They are always true. It doesn't matter what your background. It doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or not. These things are all, and you can't say that anymore. And this is the kind of philosophy that we are seeing over and over, not just in schools. I'm picking on the schools a little bit. We have some public school teachers here. They can back me up or not back me up here, as the case may be. But it's not just schools. We are being taught over and over again in our society that it's not appropriate for you to bind value judgments on other people. Which, in my mind, by the way, is a value judgment. I find that to be ironic there. You're not permitted to bind value judgments on other people. Well, who gives you the right to say that? Isn't that a value judgment? Anyway. The paradoxes in all this run rampant. We won't get too far down that rabbit hole, though. Basically, though, we're talking about whether we can or whether we cannot accept the idea of true Bible values. If we cannot prove these things from the Bible, then we can't prove them at all. Is it right, then, for us to bind value judgments? Is it right for us to have value judgments, as it were? In a God-centered society, this was a moot point. In a God-centered society, 90% of the population agreed, at least in concept, that there was a God. And that this God was all-powerful. And that this God was authoritative. We may disagree somewhat on what exactly is meant when he said this or said that, how strictly we should adhere to his book or to his writings. We may disagree on that somewhat. But at least in principle, we accepted the idea of right and wrong as God defines right and wrong. When God is no longer part of the picture, all of this falls apart. When God is not anymore part of the picture, now we are left to define our own right and wrong. And is it a coincidence in the modern day that we have so much trouble with college students, for instance, cheating on their exams? Far more than they did a generation before. All the professors know this. Cheating is rampant. Law breaking is rampant. Drug use is rampant. Violence even. We talked about violence a little bit last time. Over and over again, we see violations of basic principles of morality. What we thought, anyway, were basic principles of morality. But when we
do not have God to lean on, when we do not have the option of saying, God says this, God exists, God rules, when that is no longer a valid argument, chaos is inevitable. Are you surprised that we wind up here? I'm telling you, we had to wind up here. If we hadn't been here in 2019, we would have been here in 5 years or 10 years. It is inevitable that a society that rejects godly values eventually does not have any values at all to speak of. What we need to do is come back to this idea of acknowledging God. And I'm not going to cure society's ills this morning here. I'm not sure I'm going to cure anybody's ills this morning. But what I do want to do is emphasize in our minds the importance of these topics. Arm ourselves against the language of our society. And reemphasize in our minds so that we can reemphasize in the minds of others how important it is that we acknowledge God and that we keep God at the forefront of our conversation. There is no such thing as God topics and other topics. If you believe in God, everything is a God topic. Everything has to do with God. Everything has to do with your relationship with God, including and particularly morality. In the absence of God, there is no such thing as good. Good is what you believe, what I believe. We can all agree that Hitler was a bad guy. That seems to be the one guy that we all coalesce around here. Everybody agrees Hitler's a bad guy, right? If you think Hitler's a good guy, raise your hand. Yeah, that's what I thought. Hitler's a bad... But the Germans thought Hitler was okay. They voted for Hitler. Overwhelmingly. They thought that this, all these horrible, horrible things were going on. A lot of them, anyway, were aware of what... And they were okay with it. By community standards... By local standards, they thought that was okay. And we're horrified at this. But that's what happens when society makes up its own rules. Occasionally, you're going to get a society that is horrifying to you. And you, in turn, become horrifying to somebody else. American society is looked at aghast by a large number of people in the world. And maybe with some cause, by the way. How could Americans possibly live that way? And we'll look at the same... Look at the same way at other people, in other cultures. Who's right and who's wrong? Nobody's right. Nobody's wrong. If there isn't God, judgment becomes completely and totally individual. We ran through the judges in our quick survey of the Bible a few months ago, and the key phrase in the entire book is the very last phrase in chapter 21, verse 25, after several chapters of describing some horrible, horrible behavior that was going on that day. The same basic sentiment is given to us three different times in Judges. But in chapter 21, verse 25, it said very clearly here, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That's what happens when you have no king in Israel. When you have no king, everybody does what they want to do. When they cat is away, the mouse will play, right? That's what we say. I like to think that when Tracy and I leave the house, we're going to come back to a reasonably ordered system. And generally speaking, we do. We did this time. We're thankful for that. But that's not by any means a given, is it? How many times have we heard of, you know, parents go out of town now, kids, no parties. Oh, no, 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 no parties. And then as soon as they're out the door, oh, party. There are no rules anymore because there's no king in Israel. And that's what happens in America. That's what happens in any human culture. When there is no ultimate rule, there are no rules at all. And you may have your idea about what a good thing is, and somebody else may have another idea about what a good thing is, and oftentimes, not only are they not compatible, they are directly opposite one another. We have passages like 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verses 3 through 5. People who say anyway, their motives are God's business, they say they're trying to do the right thing here. But ultimately, they see godliness as a means of gain. They're trying to get their own way, and that's what values wind up being. In the absence of true godliness, in the absence of God's judgment, Your value simply become a means to an end. You're trying to get to where you want to be. Have a certain lifestyle, have a certain amount of money, have certain friends, whatever it happens to be. That's where I want to be. And the things that get me there, those are good things. And the things that keep me from getting there, those are bad things. And is it any wonder that we're in conflict with one another? In fact, how could I possibly pursue my welfare, my own short-term good, with all that is in me, and not come in conflict with any of you? It's inevitable that happens. And I can call myself good as long as the day is. And you can do the same. And ultimately, it becomes the same thing. Chaos. It's a situational kind of thing. Things that were anathema in our country 200 years ago now are the gold standard. If you disagree with this, clearly you are not. You're subhuman. Cultures change, though. Woe to the one who calls good evil and evil good. That's what God says. In Isaiah chapter 5, chapter 5, verse 20. God says there's such thing as good, there's such thing as evil. And you should not cross between the paths. Human society changes the definition of good and evil all the time. On a generational basis, we are constantly in flux with regard to what is good and what is bad. If you read the wrong magazines, you wake up a heretic one of these days. It's impossible, ultimately, to enforce these standards. And it gets even worse when lying is entered into it. Because somebody asks you if you're measuring up to the current standard, you just say yes. Or no, as the case may be. Whatever it happens to be. What you're actually doing is irrelevant. All that matters is the answer to your question. And if the answer doesn't have to be accurate, then you do whatever you want to do. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like your society where people have no regard for the truth? They say whatever gets them through the day. Become a nation of five-year-olds. Five-year-olds don't care anything about the truth. They just want to avoid spankings for another 10 seconds. That's all they care about. If a lie gets it done, they will tell a lie. And 10 seconds later, they're going to tell another lie. They will do whatever they have to do to get, just kick that can a little bit farther down the road. It's not about standards. It's about short-term survival. That's it. That is becoming our culture. Our entire society is all about abandoning standards in pursuit of short-term benefits. It becomes a completely arbitrary sort of thing. The word of the Lord stands forever. That's the passage that we read from Isaiah chapter 40. Grass withers, flower fades. When the breath of the Lord hits, and that's kind of ironic because the breath of the Lord is oftentimes seen as a metaphor for his spoken word. God speaks, and the things that you value, the things that you treasure in this life are gone. The only thing that matters, the only thing that really lasts, the only permanent fixture in this world is God's word. Which is to say, God himself. If we take that away, then there are no rules at all. We just wind up doing whatever we want. And so does everybody else. Is that really a culture that you want to live in? Well, I got news for you. That's the culture you do live in. That is our society. And it's becoming more and more like that, seems like anyway, every day. And it's going to continue to get more and more like that until God re-enters the picture. You cannot get a universally consistent moral code without God. Because if God's not there, then we have to arbitrate. We have to be the ones who are in charge. And if somehow we can all agree that Bob is going to say what's right and wrong, and everybody get behind Bob, and whatever he says goes, and everybody agrees with that, then that would work. But we're not going to do that. Because we know Bob's not that smart. Right? And we know we're going to disagree with Bob sometimes. That's why, by the way, people reject God. Because God's going to disagree with them every once in a while. And maybe more often than that. What we have to do is humble ourselves, acknowledge that God knows better than we do,
and accept his definitions for terms instead of insisting on our own. In the presence of God, when God does in fact enter into the picture, suddenly there is such a thing as good. Good is identifiable. Good is measurable. You can actually know where you stand. It doesn't change from situation to situation. It doesn't change from century to century. It simply is. Because God simply is. Jesus plays on this notion in Luke chapter 18, verse number 19. When the rich young ruler, not trying to make some kind of broad spiritual statement, says, "Good teacher, why do you call me good? There is no one good except God." And Jesus' point, of course, is not simply to claim deity himself, although perhaps he was doing that there, but rather that good is a reflection of God. The only way something can be good is by imitating God, by being a reflection of God's will. Human beings become good human beings if and only if they resemble God. Because God is the unchanging, consistent definition of goodness. When we resemble God's character, we assume a good character. With that in mind, a God-centered culture pursues that goal universally. Now, again, we're not always perfect, and there are going to be some people who do not do this at all. But if, as a society, we can agree, at least in concept, that God's will is right, then we have suddenly a universal standard that everybody can agree to, that everybody can try to submit to, and when somebody steps out of line, it's not you hurt my feelings or you did something I don't like. It's that you violated the standard. The standard that supposedly you agreed to. The standard that came from God and not from men. The same way with the world that's around us. God looked at all that he had made after 6 days. And behold, everything was very good, the text said there. I love that. Why was it very good? Because we hadn't messed it up yet. That's why. Because sin had not yet entered into the world. When the world was what God wanted it to be, it was very good. And then we were given custody of that, and we did some good things, and we continue to do some good things, but lots of bad things also. Good is being the way God wants it to be. It is impossible for us as human beings, flawed, fallible human beings, to improve on what he has done. Whether we're talking about his law, we're talking about his morality, we're talking about his arrangement for the church, whatever it happens to be. In the presence of God, at least in principle, we can agree God's way is best. Again, we can argue all day long about what exactly God's will is, but at least we're on the same page. At least we're all discussing what God's will is rather than what I want personally. Which is a road that we cannot possibly find unity on. The idea is good when it accomplishes his purposes. I got a lot of good ideas. You hang around me much, I'll share some of them with you. I got ideas for government. I got ideas for professional sports. I got ideas for fashion. I got all kinds of ideas. You may agree with some of them. You'll probably disagree with some of them. That's okay. That's fine as far as that goes. But with regard to spiritual things, the only good ideas are the ideas that reflect the will of God. If they do not reflect the will of God, they are not good ideas by very definition. All scripture is given to us, the text says, by inspiration. God breathed it out, as it were, through the prophets and inspired writers. Paul tells Timothy, it's profitable for doctrine, for proof, for correction, for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be adequate for every good work. Not most good works, not a lot of good works, not the works that you think are good, but somebody else might not think is good. Every good work. That's why we read our Bible. So that we will know what God's will is, so that we will be in position to implement God's will in our lives, and perhaps even, to a certain degree, in the lives of other people. so that we can grow in our understanding, so we can grow closer to His will for our lives, so that we can be good in His sight. That's the only way we possibly can do it. Nothing good is ever going to come from rejecting His way. In the presence of God. Now again, you take God out of the mix, we got a different issue. But if you agree that God is good, maybe we should have sung that song. Because we sing it all the time, right? God is so good. Not just that He's good to me, but that He's good by His nature. God is always good. I am not. If I choose to reject His will for my life, by the very nature of things, I cease to be good. And at least in principle, God-fearing people can agree on that. And we can help one another as we try to walk in a good path, in an approved path, rather than the popular path or the modern path or whatever you want to call it in the modern day. As the people of God, we who presumably are living in the presence of God, who are pushing back against this idea of godlessness, who want God in our lives, and the more the merrier, and in our neighbors' lives as well, we have to embrace His values. I'm not saying you can't have your own values. I'm not saying you can't have your favorite restaurant, favorite domestic dog, your favorite ball team. I'm not saying that. You can go ahead with all those things. That's fine. But we're talking about spiritual values. Things that qualify you as a good or not good human being. These have to come from God. And that means we as Christians have to seize opportunities, almost invent opportunities, to stand apart from the world, to not blend in, to be different, distinct. The people out there in the world, they assume a certain characteristic, a certain look, sometimes a literal physical look, because they do not care anything about the things of God. You look different from that because you do care about the things of God. It should be the most natural thing in the world for us to distinguish ourselves from that. That means that we actively embrace Jesus in our lives. We cannot help but teach these things that we have seen and done. The apostles said when they were being threatened in Acts chapter 4, verse 19 and 20, "This is who we are." It's like asking a fish to walk on land. Why would we do that? How could we do that? This is who we are. This is what we've decided to be. We need to oppose sin actively. Do not partake in these unfruitful works of darkness, the text says in Ephesians chapter 5. But rather, reprove them. Expose them. For it is disgraceful, verse 12 says, even to speak of these things which are done by them in secret. But all things become visible when they are exposed by the light. For everything that becomes visible is light. That is your responsibility and my responsibility. To help darkness come into the light so that the things that are being done in darkness can be shown to be dark, shown to be bad, shown to be evil. Use whatever politically incorrect term you want to use here. But according to God, certain things are wrong and people need to know about it. And a lot of people don't. Because they don't believe the same things you now believe. We need to promote righteousness actively. It's not just a matter of opposing evil. We have to promote good. Stand for what is right in the world. Chapter 2 of Philippians, chapter verse 2 and verse 14 and following. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory, because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. A single candle flame can be seen for, I think, 2 miles in utter darkness. Your light for Jesus is visible by the very nature of it. Now, sometimes we want to put a bushel over it so people won't see it. But that's not God's plan. That's not what God wants. God has determined that you should stand apart from evil and actively pursue good things. And do it with a good attitude, by the way. Doesn't do any good if you say, "Well, I didn't rob any banks today, so I don't have any money, but God's good. We need to do better than that. Don't we want to do better than that? Don't we want to show that living in the light is fundamentally different, fundamentally better than living in the dark? We need to rejoice in this path. We are better off living in the presence of God. We look at the world and we marvel that anyone would do anything else. Surely you see how you're destroying yourselves as individuals, as families, as a society. It is not difficult at all for anyone with an open mind to see where this came from. You do not have to choose this path. Your grandparents didn't choose this path. And your grandchildren don't have to choose this path. We can turn this around. But the only way we can do it, I don't want to sound politically active here. That's not the point. I want to sound spiritually active. Because if we will rejoice in this new path, we can experience ripple effects in our own life that affect our family, our neighbors, and maybe even our culture. Who knows? If we pursue God's plan will bring peace. Satan's plan brings war. You do things your own way, you will get in trouble with your neighbors. Have you ever had a confrontation with your neighbor over how you wanted his front door to look? Or, you know, these homeowners associations, some of them get kind of picky, right? Well, I don't care for the color of my neighbor's door, so I'm going to protest the homeowners association. We're going to get it painted to a different color. Oh, that does not go well, right? All of a sudden, you're imposing your values on somebody else. Oh, no, we're going to do that. Whenever an individual tries to impose his will on another individual, bad things happen. We've come to expect that, right? We sure don't like it when people do it to us, and they tend to make it inconvenient when we want to do it to other people. That's the way it works. It's always going to work that way. This wisdom, the text says in back up to verse 13. Who among you is wise in understanding? James 3, verse 13. Let him show his good behavior, his deeds, in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. See, Christians start to think like the world. We see what happens when the world thinks like the world. Don't do that. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. We know what it's like to live in a society that values God's things and only God's things. There are God's things, and we're going to bear down on those things. And there are things that are not especially God's things, which are at best indifferent and at worst awful. These are the only things that we care about. We're not going to pick a fight over this stuff over here. It doesn't matter. And you mess with the things of God, we'll pick a fight over that. Absolutely. But all of those who truly pursue God's things will find this peace that God promises to us. God's plan is true. Man's plan is a lie. The heart is deceitful. It's full of deceit. The text says in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9, We believe lies constantly. I'm constantly amazed. I've commented on this before. How people can say, I just knew in my heart that it was right. Right up to the point where I knew it was wrong. But my heart was convinced. I just knew it was true. But it wasn't true. Has your heart ever lied to you? Has your heart lied to you today? As far as that goes. This is a constant kind of thing. Why are we going to base an entire society on what some individual's heart feels at any given moment, which may feel differently tomorrow or next week, which may or may not be right even today? God's will is always right. Never has been anything else. It can't possibly not be true. So therefore, all you have to do is accept God's will, go in His path, and it goes right. It really does not have to be more complicated than that. God's plan brings order. Man's plan brings chaos. And again, not to overmake the point here, it cannot possibly result in any other way. It's happened in a generation in my lifetime. It will continue to happen this way as long as we maintain this approach. Chapter 5 of Ephesians, verse number 18. The comparison. I love the comparison between God's way of creating order and man's way of creating order. Do not be drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, disorder, chaos. But be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks for all things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, God, even the Father, and be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. And this really kind of hits on the reason why this plan is so unpopular with a lot of people in the modern day. The idea of submitting to one another in the fear of Christ, giving thanks to God, acknowledging His greatness, acknowledging our need, our shortcomings, sublimating our own will to other people's will. Those are not popular things to do for people in the world. But if you will embrace God, if you will embrace His values, His wisdom, then you find yourself in a position where everything makes sense. Everything falls in order. And everybody that you come in contact with who has that same value system forms with you this harmonious unity. It's like a song where the altos do their thing and the sopranos do their thing and the basses do their thing and the tenors do their thing and it all comes together into this melodic whole where everyone is valuable, everyone is important, everyone is right because everyone is submitting to God. That is the only way you're going to be able to get this. That's the only way our society is going to get this. So tell your friends. If you want to fix the world, this is the way you're going to do it. I'm aware, there's all kinds of approaches that politicians are going to try to make, social groups, all that. And maybe you'll be able to accomplish some short-term good. But the only way our society is going to be unified in the long term is if we return to this basic concept of godly values. That God knows what's best, and what is best for me is to submit to God. And that works, even if it doesn't ever work in American society, and I'm not sure exactly how well it ever worked, or if it'll ever work that way again, but no matter how well it does or does not work, it can work and will work in your life, and in your family's life, and the life of this church. Because we can choose to submit to God, we can choose to embrace His values, and go in His path, and only His path. If there's anything we can do this morning to help you walk with Christ more perfectly, if there's anything we can do to help you submit to His will, and help you push back the worldly impulses that perhaps have been guiding you in the wrong direction, if there's anything we can do to encourage you in the faith, including helping you into the water of baptism, as our brother Greg did just on Wednesday, if there's anything we can do to help you in a spiritual arena, please allow us to help while we stand and sing to encourage you. This